Good morning. Greetings. Welcome, Vox community. It's good to be with you this morning. Hopefully you're finding ways to stay cool or avoid the heat of the day. Recently, I was asked if it seems like people were struggling more than usual this year, which seemed like such an obvious and odd question. But I was like, yes, speaking for myself. But then I actually paused and I thought about it and I replied, I feel like whatever I used to do to cope or hide from my struggles, which include my thought traps or difficult emotions, whatever I used to do doesn't work anymore. Like, I can only eat so many cookies and I can only watch so much video. And I thought about how I entered this year, though, with some rare optimism. Like, I was kind of playful and back in January, which seems so far away. I was like, hey, it's 2020, the year everything will become clear. Ha, 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 ha. And it has been a year. Where much about us individually and collectively has come into focus. So our question as we begin this morning is, when have I felt myself saying, the struggle is real? And if you want, it's probably hard to choose one, but if you want, you're welcome to respond in the chat on YouTube, or you can just kind of reflect. Like, it might even be this morning. Where would you say that in your life, that the struggle is real? So take a minute and just pause and reflect on that. You're welcome to continue to respond. This might be like a moment-to-moment question you can answer with lots of answers, or it might be hard to locate something, which is fine. But oftentimes when we struggle, it doesn't even occur to us to bring that into the realm of spirituality. Or perhaps this has been such a complex thing in our past that we found it easier just to try to deal with everything at face value. Yet this morning we'll explore how new possibilities open up when we bring our real struggles into our connection with God, whatever that might be. And one of the most famous images of someone struggling with God comes when Jacob physically wrestled with God during one of his most desperate times in life. He was a refugee traveling in the open with his family and all he possessed. And we see that even in this place of survival, we need solitude to really struggle with the deep stuff. Our passage starts off, Jacob took his family and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and another wrestled with him until daybreak. So Jacob took time away from all of his connections, all of his stuff. I imagine he was just so overwhelmed. He was just like, I just can't. I just can't. Everybody, I'm going to go over there. And we need to do this rhythmically, if we can, to learn the art of being alone and making peace with ourselves. And in that space of pulling away, another appeared to him in this space. Some translations say a man or an angel. Another is another translation of that. And so this is what many spiritual writers call shadow work, though, or shadow boxing. If everyone around you welcomes your happiness and not your sadness, welcomes your exposure, your strength and not your weakness, welcomes your success and not your failures, we learn to express or to give people what they want from us. The happiness, the success, the strength, the composure, and to repress the other things, the sadness, the failure, the weakness, the falling apart. However, that shadow doesn't go away. it just gets buried, and we become blind to those powerful emotions that we've pushed down. It's kind of like if you've ever taken a inflatable ball and just pressed it underwater really deep. And then after a while, it's just going to shoot out the side somewhere and kind of explode to the surface with the equal force that it was pushed down. And solitude is that space where we can be with what we normally would push down and then project onto other people. It's like you ever notice certain people really annoy you, and then you really think about, like, what's the thing that really annoys me about that person? It's like, oh, it's something I really don't like about myself as well. And then we want to distance ourselves or attack or blame those people. But in solitude, we can let the ball slowly rise to the surface and see that it's not about that person as much as it is about me. And I love this image of Jacob wrestling with, it's depicted here as like an angelic being. And out away from everything in this kind of older image, there's like cactus, and he's kind of exposed at the edge of the rock. Indeed, Jacob is at his limit of what he can carry on his own. And I want to invite us this morning as a community just to take an hour of solitude this week and to meet God in your shadow, to take any intense emotion or judgment you have of another person and see it as a mirror to your own healing and unfolding. I realized a few months ago, I was really angry with my family because they weren't reading my mind and meeting my needs. And then I took some time alone and realized I was really actually angry with myself for ignoring my needs and for not communicating them. And just that simple thing shifted my stance toward those who are close to me. And it also allowed my needs to start being met more frequently. It seems very obvious. And I probably share this example at least 3 times a year because it's part of my basic life curriculum. Like, I keep being reminded of it. And what I find most beautiful in our passage here is that somehow when we face our shadow, we are in fact at the same time intensely relating to God. We see how Jacob wrestles with this mysterious other and comes to see is also wrestling with the divine. The dirty and messy and undone parts of him are most sacred in our text today. And this truth becomes ever clearer as we journey through our passage further and see how we will be changed when we wrestle with God. The text goes on, when the others saw that they did not prevail against Jacob, they struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with them. This kind of seems like a little bit of a cheap shot, but, you know, everything has meaning, right? And then they said, let me go, for the day is breaking. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So the others said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And then they said, you shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed. God says, let me go. That's kind of amazing, actually. Just like, have you ever had a season of life where you were really holding on to your understanding of God and life in a certain way? One like common belief I've encountered in my work, spiritual direction, is that God is in control of everything and I'm suffering, so God must be causing this to teach me something. And I've walked with so many people who have lost their faith bitterly with that belief, or kept holding on and ending up with an empty intimacy, a relationship with God that had no real trust. And yet what a kindness it's been when they were given permission to relax their grip of certainty and allow for mystery. What if I don't know why this is happening? What if God's still present with me and loving me through this? When Jacob lets go, he receives his blessing. And his blessing is allowing his identity to change. That's like what he gets out of this moment, is this internal shift. Who he thinks he is finds space to transform. And his name is changed from Jacob, which means to follow or to be behind, because he was the second born. It's also where they get the word heel from. So, you know, probably not a name he loves. And his name gets changed to Israel, which means one who wrestles with God, which is much cooler. And this becomes the name of God's people. Their identity is formed in this intimate struggle to know God and to understand their lives through this gritty intimacy. It's really so profound that when we face the ugly parts of our lives, it gets acknowledged as intimacy with God. And I rarely think to bring my mess to God. I tell lots of other people to do it, and it's like an afterthought. It's like, oh, I guess I could also do the thing, right? And it's not what we thought it would be, but it's what ends up happening. I wonder what letting go might look like for you and for me today. One of the practices of letting go we do as a community is forgiveness. And in just a moment, when we experience the Eucharist, we will pray one of the most common human prayers, the Lord's Prayer, Jesus's prayer. And one of the lines that we'll say together is, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us." And there's a lot of bad teaching about forgiveness, so I'll offer a couple like disclaimers. Like, when I speak of forgiveness, I'm not saying we shouldn't be angry or that what is done is okay. Like, I imagine Jacob was furious with God. He had trusted God his whole life for so many years and did what he thought God wanted. And now he was being oppressed, his life was threatened, and he was on the verge of losing everything. So he took God to the mat. But forgiveness, it drains us of resentment so we can more freely engage reality as it is. Jacob's anger, rage, fear, and grief were appropriate. And like all emotions, when we work them out, when we bring them to the surface, they're meant to flow through us. When we hold on to them, we become resentful and bitter, and it becomes a poison in us, inhibiting our ability to act in our power. If I forgive, it doesn't mean I will trust the person or system again without repair, but I am regaining my personal power so I can act with deeper freedom and creativity. A couple of weeks ago, this work of forgiveness came front and center when Grace, my daughter, and I took what's become an annual trip to the Pecos Mountains. Got a couple of pictures here. And we brought like every imaginable thing, like hundreds of little small things and gadgets on our back. But the one thing we realized we didn't have at 7 p.m. when we were laying in our tent was a good book to read. So a couple of nights in the tent, we listened to this audiobook and that I've been kind of slowly going through by Eckhart Tolle. And I asked her what she thought after the first night. She said, "I find his voice really soothing." Like, I think it was like putting her to sleep. But she asked, "But do you get anything out of it?" And I said, "Yeah, I've really been practicing forgiving the present moment in my life for being what it is." And she laughed. And it was kind of just amazing, but it kind of made sense. Forgive us of our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. You ever feel like life is the one sinning against you, like the thing that is betraying you? I do. Like in our audio tent sessions, these words actually met me so deeply from Tolle. He said, "Forgiveness of the present is even more important than forgiveness of the past. If you forgive every moment, allow it to be as it is, then there will be no accumulation of resentment that needs to be forgiven at some later time." It's like if we just work to forgive the past, we're always playing catch up. Why not interrupt the mechanism that collects resentment? And I understand anger is an emotion that helps us return to our power. And yet if we hold on to it, it begins to drain us of our power, right? And we all have some resentment. If you're not aware of it, it's probably in your shadow work. It's probably your beach ball. So take a moment this morning, and I'll invite us as a community to forgive our life for being what it is. Like, what about my life today needs forgiveness? Maybe consider something that's been really difficult. It could be a person or a situation. It could be your mood, your in general, like yourself. It could be your health. It could be so many things. And really focus on that or those things for a moment that have you wrapped. Could be work, looking for work and not finding it, family, aloneness, too much togetherness. And now I want to invite us to take a couple deep breaths. And as you exhale, you can say internally or out loud, I forgive you for being so hard, so difficult. Forgive you for being awful, for betraying me. I forgive you. And see if you can just a little bit begin to let go. Jesus' students asked, how many times should I forgive? And Jesus said, 7 times 70. So it's at least 490 times. So see if you can forgive your life 490 times this week. Though some scholars actually see these numbers as symbolic, like 7 represents completeness or perfection, and then multiplied by 10 also means something else profound I forgot this week. So it might be to practice this until you don't need to do it any longer. On our hike, on our last day, we just packed up everything. And right as we got our packs full and put them on our back, a thunderstorm rolled in and rain started to fall. And we put on our light rain gear. And we started to trudge down the last 5 miles of our trip. We have no pictures of the descent. Like here, this is a photo of our path, this passageway on the way up. We went over this large meadow. And the rain, actually, as we went back across this with the clouds and the sky was dark, it started blowing sideways. And we actually went through 2 different hailstorms. And the temperature dropped from 84 to like 54 in probably like 10 minutes. And about halfway down, like we had like 1 or 2 times we stopped. I just asked Grace, like, how you doing? And she said, I'm okay. I'm forgiving the moment. I said, yeah, me too, over and over again. And it helped because it reminded me I'm not guaranteed anything. And it gave me space to deal with the suffering present without adding, if that makes sense. So when we pull away and do our shadow work, and when we begin to forgive and let go, we may slowly start to see this last point in our text today, where we will find a new day when we struggle and let go through the dark nights. Then Jacob asked them, please tell me your name. But they said, why is it that you ask my name? And there they blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved. But upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Why is it you ask my name? I imagine this is the moment where Jacob paused and became aware that he was reflexively holding on to his understanding of God or this moment out of survival. Yet when God asked, why do you want to know? Jacob realized he didn't actually need anything more. He just had a habit of trying to name everything, to control it through language, to hold on. But when he looked at his habit, he realized it was smaller than the experience itself. And he let go, and the blessing flowed. And Jacob called the place Penuel, which means face of God. And the sun rose upon him as he passed the place. The new day meets him as he lets go of this encounter, knowing that he won't experience God again in the same way. We often think of God, wrestling with God, as this kind of intensely serious thing, and it often is. But this week I was also reminding that wrestling with God can also be playful and joyous. So I want to invite you to take a look at this video of this musician being heckled and chastised. And it's an image of another way I imagine we can wrestle with God. So enjoy.
But if the world was ending, you'd come over, right?
False.
You'd come over and you'd stay the night.
It's horrible to travel if the world is ending.
Would you love me for the hell of it? All our fears would be irrelevant.
Hey, no boys allowed.
Come
the world is ending, no boys allowed.
Sky be falling.
The world is ending, no boys ever in this house.
Would you
go to your studies.
Why?
Must you studies. No world, daddy. Ending. Nobody is coming over. Close the windows.
So honey now.
Stop it now. I don't want to hear one more note from this mouth. Go brush your teeth. Go to sleep. Enough. Close the windows.
Oh my gosh. That's so good. There's like several of these. I played them for my daughter. I was like, could be worse. She was making these videos and her dad just spontaneously started heckling her. So it seems like we can see how that there's a way in which relating to God could also be playful banter sometimes. Have you ever felt like the universe or God is just like pranking you, or that you're the punchline for some cosmic joke? And sometimes it feels terrible and sometimes it's kind of enjoyable. But we could ask this week, what kind of wrestling with God is meaningful to me now? Like, is it serious? It really might be. Like, you may have some intense things that you need to really bring. Or maybe it is playful. Or maybe there's some pain or some healing. Maybe it's strong. Like, you need to experience God's strength with you. Or defiant. Like, you need to really cuss God out or something. God can handle it. Part of the reason Jacob lets go of his question, though, is that I think after he wrestles, he realizes that the next time he wrestles with God, it will be different. Because even as he limps away, he knows he is not the same person that he was just one day ago. I come back to this image again as we're closing, because it seems like the angel in this depiction of our passage is kind of like this parent that's like letting their kid wrestle and they're like, oh, you're so strong. But it also feels like true. I love the detail of what it means to be in a real relationship where we make contact with the divine, not after we get through our struggle, but in the very heart of the battle. So, beautiful community, may we find playful ease in our vulnerability this week, next to the crushing rawness, and next to the warrior peacemaking that this time is calling many of us into. And may wrestling with God be something that steadies you, gives you resource and courage to be in your life, to meet your life as it is. And pray all this with much mercy and love for all of you this morning, just where you are. Amen.